Hey, Notorious Bakersfield fans. Notorious Bakersfield the book is available for purchase. If you enjoyed this podcast, you'll love the book. Notorious Bakersfield the book dives deeper into the most infamous crimes, incidents, and personalities that have shaped Bakersfield. This literary adaptation uncovers 30 astonishing true stories from Bakersfield and Kern counties last century. Notorious stories from a notorious community. To purchase your copy, go to Amazon.com or your Amazon app and search for Notorious Bakersfield, the book. This is the Notorious Bakersfield podcast. I'm Robert Peterson, the host and creator of this podcast that takes a look back at some of Bakersfield's most notorious crimes, events, and characters. Notorious Bakersfield listeners, the launch party this past Sunday was a huge success. It was great. It was a great turnout. I enjoyed the opportunity meeting so many fans of the podcast. If you weren't able to attend the party, there'll be several more opportunities celebrating the release of Notorious Bakersfield, the book. And I'm going to get into them. If you'll indulge me for a few minutes, I want to let everybody know about the upcoming events regarding Notorious Bakersfield, the book. The first one is happening today, Tuesday, December 5th, the day this episode is being released. It will be at the Bill Memorial Library on Truxton Avenue in the local history room. I won't be selling any books at this event, but if you've purchased a book online, you can certainly bring it there, and I'll be happy to sign it. That's Tuesday, December 5th at 5:30 p.m. at the Bill Memorial Library on Truxton Avenue. The next one is a fundraiser for the Kern Literacy Council at their Wine and Words fundraiser, Thursday, December 7th. 5:30 p.m. at the Padre Hotel. Tickets to this fundraiser are $50 per person. I'll have books available for purchase there. Go to their website, kernliteracy.org, to buy your tickets to support that wonderful community organization. Next, I'll be at Russo's Books for a book signing Saturday, December 9th at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Russo's is at 1600 New Stein Road, number 182. It's the office building just north of Olive Garden. That's Saturday, December 9th at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Russo's Books. Next up, a meet and greet at Jerry's Pizza and Pub, 1817 Chester Avenue, Saturday, December 16th at 1:30 p.m. You can come by, hang out, eat some of Jerry's world-famous pizza, and buy your copy of Notorious Bakersfield, the book. That's Saturday, December 16th at 1:30 p.m. at Jerry's Pizza and Pub on Chester Avenue. Then, Saturday, December 23rd at 1 p.m., another meet and greet at my friends Martin and Audrey Chavez's business, Martin's Meats and Deli, at 801 21st Street, right on the corner of 21st and Q Streets. If you're a last-minute Christmas shopper, this event is for you. Saturday, December 23rd at 1 p.m. at Martin's Meats and Deli on the corner of 21st and Q Streets. If you can't make any of those events, you can purchase your copy on Amazon. Just go to Amazon.com or the Amazon app and search for Notorious Bakersfield, the book. If you're in the Bakersfield area, Russo's Books has a copy in stock. You can swing by there, 1600 New Stein. Now that that's out of the way, let's get to the topic of this episode. 1993 was an especially violent year in Kern County. The Kern County Coroner's Office recorded 80 homicides that year, a 12-year high. None of those 80 killings captured the attention of Bakersfield citizens more than one that occurred towards the end of the year, just a couple of weeks before Christmas. The victim's name was Diana Contreras. She was a petite 19-year-old. her assailants targeted her because she looked like an easy mark. This week is the 30th anniversary of that vicious crime. This is Diana Contreras. Diana Contreras was an Arvin High School graduate who was attending Bakersfield College in 1993. Even though she was only 19, she was a very responsible young adult. Not only was she a student at BC, she also worked at a facility that cared for the developmentally disabled. She was living on her own in a tidy studio apartment in Southwest Bakersfield. And Diana owned her own car, a 1992 Red Eagle Talon. Diana purchased that vehicle with money she had saved herself. Pretty remarkable for someone only 19 years old. Friends, family, teachers, and her fellow students at Bakersfield College said she was a diligent student. She was determined to get a degree in psychology. They said when she wasn't working or going to school, Diana spent her free time studying. On the morning of December 9th, 1993, Diana went to the Valley Plaza Mall. She was visiting the mall to make a payment on a necklace she had on layaway at Don Roberto Jewelers. The necklace, a gift she intended to give her mother for Christmas. Diana was supposed to go to her sister's house at 1:30 that afternoon. She had agreed to babysit a relative's child, but she never showed up. That was uncharacteristic of Diana. She was typically very dependable. Diana didn't show up that afternoon to babysit because she was dead. She was murdered. Diana Contreras' body was found at 7:30 in the morning in the foothills east of Taft, discovered by an oil field worker. She'd been shot 3 times with what police described at that time as a large caliber weapon. Homicide detectives said she was fully clothed. There was no evidence that she'd been sexually assaulted. They said it appeared she was killed where her body was found. Unaccounted for was Diana's red 1992 Eagle Talon. Police retraced her last day. A mall security officer saw Diana at the Valley Plaza in the morning. Other people witnessed her make several purchases from different stores at the mall. The final shopping stop appears to be at Don Roberto Jewelers to make a payment on that necklace. That was around 11:30 in the morning. So she was just doing typical Christmas shopping, purchasing Christmas gifts for her friends and family. When she was a no-show at her sister's house at 1:30 p.m., police believe she encountered her killer, or killers, sometime after leaving the jewelry store. Both her family and detectives had a lot of questions. Why was her body found near Taft? Did she know someone in Taft? Someone she could have been visiting? And was she kidnapped from the Valley Plaza? From the very beginning, her family felt whoever killed Diana abducted her from the Valley Plaza. Like I said at the beginning, 1993 was a record-breaking year for homicides in Kern County. Diana's murder was the 78th that year, but the 4th for that week. 2 more homicides after Diana's were tallied in the closing weeks of 1993. But the publicity about Diana's case overshadowed most of those other stories. It dominated the news, probably because it was Christmas season, and the likely location she met her killer was the mall, a place that Bakersfield residents flocked to during the holidays. A few days after Diana's murder, law enforcement received a tip from a security guard. This guard claimed he saw Diana's missing car in an apartment complex near 38th Street. I'm not sure how serious detectives took this tip, but the report was published in the Bakersfield Californian. I say I'm not sure how serious they took this tip because as it was later revealed, Police were following other clues as well, clues that indicated whoever had killed the petite teenager was probably not in Bakersfield at all. Law enforcement didn't reveal to the public until days later that Diana Contreras' ATM card was also unaccounted for. And there was a cellular phone in her stolen Eagle Talon. Remember, this was 1993. Cell phones weren't common back then. I was surprised to learn this detail when researching the story. I just didn't expect that from a story from that era. With Wells Fargo Bank's cooperation, authorities were able to track activity from the ATM card. They determined it was used in Bakersfield December 9th, the day Diana went missing. It was used again the next day here in Bakersfield. The card had a $300 per day limit on how much money could be withdrawn. So the killer or killers were simply taking out $300 each day they were on the loose. The next withdrawal was made 3 days after Diana was killed. This time it was used at a 7-Eleven in Las Vegas, then again in Green Valley, Utah, then in Colorado. The suspect or suspects were leaving electronic breadcrumbs for authorities to follow, tracking them as they made their way east. Using this information, Kern County authorities notified law enforcement agencies along Interstate 70. Police along that route were on high alert for Diana's stolen car. The person or persons driving it were the prime suspects in Diana's murder. As detectives were following these ATM withdrawals, another important clue emerged. Police located an abandoned stolen car. This vehicle was discovered in the parking lot of Music Plus on the corner of Ming Avenue and Valhalla Drive, just a couple of miles from the Valley Plaza. The abandoned stolen vehicle was taken from Missouri. Also stolen in that crime was a 30-30 rifle. This vehicle and the weapon theft in Missouri occurred about a week before Diana Contreras' murder in Kern County. Authorities from Missouri had a suspect linked to that stolen vehicle and rifle. It was a 22-year-old named Charles Roundtree. Sources in Missouri claimed Roundtree was accompanied by his 21-year-old girlfriend, Mary Stroder, and it was believed the couple headed west from Missouri after stealing the car and rifle from a relative. While Diana Contreras' family was packing up her Southwest Bakersfield apartment, they got a reassuring update on her case. Kern County officials notified them that two suspects had been apprehended. The suspects were stopped by a Kansas Highway Patrol trooper on Interstate 70 near the small town of Waukene, Kansas. They are driving Diana's stolen Eagle Talon. Inside the vehicle was the stolen 30-30 rifle that was the suspected murder weapon. The occupants were Charles Roundtree and Mary Stroder. But there was a twist. Roundtree and Stroder were no longer boyfriend and girlfriend. They were now husband and wife. After kidnapping and killing Diana, the couple used her car to escape Bakersfield. They fled to Las Vegas, where they used her money, Diana's money, to get married. While they are making their way from Vegas across the country, using ATM withdrawal information, law enforcement tracked their progress. The only reason that Kansas State Trooper pulled over Diana's car was because it was in a national law enforcement database for stolen vehicles. Kern County Sheriff's detectives traveled to Kansas to interview the suspects and work on getting them extradited back to California. When detectives interviewed Charles Roundtree in Kansas, he waived his constitutional rights. He admitted to kidnapping and killing Diana Contreras. He said the crimes was his decision. His girlfriend, Mary Stroder, was innocent. Desperate for money, Roundtree said he chose Diana to rob because she didn't look like she put up much of a fight. Remember, Diana was petite, 4'11", and weighed 85 pounds. Roundtree said that he was after Diana's money and car. After abducting their victim from the parking lot of the Valley Plaza, couple took Diana to a Wells Fargo ATM to withdraw cash. They then drove their victim to the oil fields east of Taft. But Roundtree said he didn't intend to shoot Diana. His only intention was to drop her off out in the middle of the oil fields. But Diana rushed up to him, begged him not to abandon her out there. He claimed Diana pleaded not to be abandoned. He told her to walk away. He said his memory was murky, but he claims he accidentally shot Diana. The rifle fired and wounded her. So he shot her a second time to put her out of her pain. But he believed that second shot he missed. So he shot her a third time. The autopsy performed on Diana Contreras' body revealed the first time she was shot, she was standing up. The bullet traveled through something she was carrying, probably her purse. Then it pierced her heart. The pathologist determined her death was instantaneous, or occurred only a few seconds after that first bullet entered her heart. The doctor maintained the other two shots were fired by someone standing near her feet as she was on the ground. Diana Contreras, or Loli as her family called her, was survived by her parents Raymond and Rosemary Contreras, brothers Paul and Orlando, and sisters Annette and Valerie. Charles Roundtree and Mary Stroder's legal teams argued to get their trial moved from Kern County, but it was denied. They were tried together in 1995. Both were found guilty. Roundtree was sentenced to death. Stroder was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Governor Jerry Brown commuted her sentence to life with the possibility of parole. In 2018, Mary Stroder was paroled. As for Roundtree, I believe he's still on death row. Resources used for this story: the Bakersfield Californian, caselaw.com, and People versus Roundtree. Thank you for listening to this episode. I'll be back next week with another notorious Bakersfield story. Until then, stay safe, stay out of trouble, don't become a future episode of the Notorious Bakersfield podcast. See you back here next week.